Come and stand at every door, yet none can hear my silent tread. I knock and yet remain unseen, for I am dead, for I am dead. I'm only 7, though I died in Hiroshima long ago. I'm 7 now as I was then. When children die, they do not grow. My hair was scorched by swirling flame. My eyes grew dim and blind. Death came and turned my bones to dust, and that was scattered by the wind. I need no fruit, I need no rice, I need no sweets or even bread. I ask for nothing for myself, for I am dead, for I am dead. All that I ask is that for peace you work today, you work today, so that the children of the world can live and grow and laugh and play.
That was Malvina Reynolds, Girl of Hiroshima. Before that, Season the Witch by Julie Driscoll, Brian Auger, and the Trinity. Another one of my ancient, ancient LPs. And before that, We Hate to See Him Go by Malvina Reynolds. And how would it be? How would it be if Mr. Fat Cat, Mr. Upper Middle Class business person with his three-piece suit, a couple of years ago, I could say Mr. Wall Street, but nowadays they're down on the bottom with us. But how would it be if they had a go? Would they go? I don't think so. I think they would buy people to go in their stead, because they're used to buying people. And before that, The March of the Women Marines. Some bizarre old record I got from here. My name is Sharon Griffiths. I haven't said that for a while. My name is Sharon Griffiths. It is 6:12 on a Sunday morning. And the name of the show is Heresy. It's a feminist, literary, political, arts show. In other words, it's my show. And what I do is what I do. But I'm trying to keep into the vein this morning of talking about war and the different perceptions that the different sexes have on war. I personally don't buy it. I don't play that. I have in front of me the latest issue, the January-February 1991 issue of Ms. Magazine. And let me tell you something. Here comes a very long aside. Ms. has changed, in case you didn't know. Ms. started, the first issue was back in November or October. It went underground. It died. It stopped production for a long time. And it was reborn like a phoenix out of the ashes. It has come back using high-quality paper, beautiful art design, with including photo essays, poems, fiction, clippings. There's a column called Clippings. I'll be reading you a few of those to get you mad. It's an absolutely beautiful magazine, and this January-February issue has almost 100 pages without one advertisement. And this is the problem that they were going through back just, well, a long time before they folded. It was impossible for the magazine, or they thought it was impossible for the magazine to survive without taking advertisements from liquor companies, beer companies, cigarette companies. And as we well know, and as I will go into in more depth on this show at later times, most, if not all, advertising is degrading and insulting to women. Whether it is for cars or clothing or perfume or anything else, it is generally and in the majority degrading and insulting to women. So there was that problem as well. That was one of the more underlying problems. But the other is that they were carrying advertisements that were for products that are stone detrimental to the health. Cigarettes, liquor, beer, wine, whatever. So there was a lot of flack about accepting that, and they were basically under the impression that this is the way it is, this is the way of life, and if we want to survive and bring some good stuff to the public, in order to do that and in order to survive, we have to take the money. We have to play Robin Hood. We got to take the money from the rich people, meaning Philip Morris and all those types, and bring the information to the sisters in the street. But it didn't quite work that way. And there was more and more and more flack. More and more advertisers were disagreeing with the editorial policy, which, of course, it's pretty easy to do if you're doing anything outside the norm. And Ms. was trying that. But when that happens, you get your hand slapped. And you can't, you just can't keep up the cash flow to get your stuff done. So anyway, Ms. was out of, had stopped publication for quite a while, if not a year, close to a year. And I kept seeing and hearing rumors about them coming back. And it's going to be great, and they're coming back, and the first issue is going to be in June, and then the first issue is going to be in August, and I kept wondering where it could be. And of course, there were delays, because there's usually a delay in getting anything up off the ground. But it's back, and it's back with no ads, which means it's $5.50 per copy for a 100-page magazine. And I know that people who are used to buying magazines, the mainstream magazines, are used to paying $3.50 for a 2,000-page magazine. If you've ever seen the key fashion issues of the hoity-toity fashion magazines, they're so big you need a shopping cart to get it home. And that's like for $3.50. But when you think about it, what is the content? How much content is there versus how many pretty pictures and how much advertising? So if you ripped out all the content, you'd come away with about a 15-page magazine. And if you spend $3.50 for that, you're not doing too good. So on one hand, I would love for everyone to run out and buy the new Ms. magazine. It's not exactly being mass distributed. I get it at a newsstand in Midtown, but I'm sure there are newsstands in the Village that have it, and places that they have to have it around. But on the other hand, Ms. is quite a bit of fuel for this show. I tend to find things I want to share with people in it every time I buy one. So if my audience buys it, they'll be reading along with me, and that's no fun either. So do what you have to do. That's my basic philosophy. In keeping with the conflict in the Gulf vein here, there's an article on page 90 of the January-February 1991 Ms. magazine called "Hell No, She Won't Go." And I'm going to share that with you right now. It's by Carol Kleiman, or Kleiman, K-L-E-I-M-A-N. If the United States hadn't decided to send troops to the Persian Gulf after Iraq invaded Kuwait, Stephanie R. Atkinson, 23, says she might still be a clueless punk rocker with purple spiked hair. Instead, the Murfreesboro, Illinois resident, who joined the Army Reserve in 1984, is the subject of national debate as the first U.S. woman war resister. She refused to participate in the Middle East intervention. Oh, that's a new word for it again, intervention. "I'm not going," Atkinson said. "I am a conscientious objector. I object to all wars. I don't condone Hussein's violence, but Iraq was gassing Iran and their own people for 8 years. Why didn't we stop them then?" Her stance comes a little late for the military. When her unit was told in October to report for active duty, Atkinson became officially AWOL. On November 2nd, she was picked up and held at Fort Knox, Kentucky. 8 days later, she was dismissed from the Army with an other-than-honorable discharge, the most severe of three possible discharges without a court-martial. By agreeing to the discharge, which makes it impossible to get a federal job, she avoids being convicted of desertion and of failing to obey special orders, which could have led to a 5-year prison sentence. The army said it let her go to avoid a costly court-martial. I'm glad it's over, said the former specialist fourth class. I just want things to get back to normal. But very little is the same in her life. She lost her job when she was activated and still is unemployed. She gets a lot of crank calls, and she dresses more conservatively. Her hair is now in a conventional ponytail, because she wants her anti-war message heard without distractions. There's little local support for me, Atkinson said before her arrest. She says most people in her rural community, including some of her family, never would have dreamed I'd stand up for myself. They say I don't love my country, but I do. I'm patriotic. Nationally, people are for me, like the postcard from a Vietnam vet that said, "You made the right decision." Atkinson said she is proud and that she has become a symbol for women against war. She often speaks out at anti-war rallies and nationally on radio and television programs. Everyone asks her, she says, if she's so adamant about the war, why did she join the reserves? And here's an aside. This is just about the most typical response you're going to get for that from men or women, and especially from third world black and Hispanic men. We were very poor, said Atkinson, a 1990s honor graduate from Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. There was increasing financial pressure on me. So my senior year of high school, I worked in a restaurant while I finished school. And that was when she enlisted at 17 with her mother's consent as a postal clerk with the 300th Adjutant General Postal Company of the U.S. Army Reserves. They promised me everything if I signed up, like in Private Benjamin. She needed the $1,000 a year stipend she would get for 4 years. It wasn't scholarship money, it was pay. I did my share of sweating. I went through training in tear gas chambers. I served on weekends and during summers for 6 years. She fulfilled her reserve duties, she says, without having any idea of the real-life military aspects. In 1988, she even re-enlisted and was at her final training camp when Kuwait was invaded. But Atkinson said there were some clues to her emerging pacifism. I had a college course in death and dying, and it made me examine my involvement in war. I studied existentialism and realized that at any point, you can take charge of your life. During her sophomore year, Atkinson joined a protest against the Strategic Defense Initiative. That's Star Wars, by the way. In 1989, during reserve training, she refused to be updated in the use of rifles. I never thought I'd have to use them. I can't kill anyone. When Iraq invaded Kuwait, I wasn't worried. I never thought this could happen to me, she said. But I felt, if they call me up, I'm not going. Bush is full of crap. Atkinson will continue to speak out against the war. When things calm down, she wants to work for racial justice and with anti-war groups. As for battling sexism, she says, I've done that all my life.
Last night I had a lovely dream. I saw a big parade with ticker tape galore, and men were marching there the like I'd never seen before. Oh, the bankers and the diplomats are going in the army. Oh, happy day, I'd give my pay to see them on parade with their paunches at attention and their striped pants at ease. They've gotten patriotic and they're going overseas. We'll have to do the best we can and bravely carry on. And we'll just keep the laddies here to manage while they're gone. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. The bankers and the diplomats are going in the army. It seems a shame to keep them from the wars they love to plan. We're all of us contented that they'll fight a dandy war. They don't need propaganda, they know what they're fighting for. They'll march along with dignity and in the best of form. And we'll just keep the laddies here to keep the lassies warm. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. The bankers and the diplomats are going in the army. We'll have to make things easy because it's all so new and strange. We'll give them silver shovels when they have to dig a hole. And they can sing in harmony when answering the roll. They'll eat their okay rations from a hand-embroidered box. And when they die, we'll bring them home and bury them in Fort Knox. Oh, oh, we hate to see them go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army. Oh, oh, we hate to see him go, the gentlemen of distinction in the army.
I don't care, 'cause time means nothing to me, yeah.
that was in stereo, too. That was nice. I was listening on my headphones. It's 6:34 in the morning on a Sunday, and my name is Sharon Griffiths, and the name of the show is Heresy. And I'll be back on March 10th. I don't exactly know what's going on between now and then, but there will be somebody here in this slot, never you fear. On March 10th, which has the misfortune to be known in the UK as Mothering Sunday, I will be here with a mother's vengeance talking about mothering and children and pressures and society and women and feminism and all that good stuff. But I've been talking about the war, and to go on with that in a lighter vein, pardon the pun, you'll find out in a minute. This is from the Reproductive Rights Update. Let me say something first. In my new job, in the place I work now, it's a women's nonprofit, semi-political, semi-social service kind of place, if that's vague enough for you. A lot of publications cross my desk. A lot of very fringe publications, a lot of newsletters from women's centers all over the country, a lot of UN updates on women all over the globe, etc. And I'm going to be sharing with them with you, because I know probably, or I have a pretty good feeling that you don't get these things. So this is from the Reproductive Rights Update, which is a newsletter put out every 2 weeks by the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, Reproductive Freedom Project. This is a little clip that they had in the back. Stealth bomber manufacturer threatens to sue condom company. The Northrop Corporation, a major weapons manufacturer and maker of the stealth bomber, is suing a small condom company for alleged trademark infringement. Stealth Condoms, based in Taylor, Texas, markets red, white, and blue condoms in packages shaped like the stealth bomber, with the motto, "They'll never see you coming." Northrop Corporation claims that by using the name Stealth, the condom company is likely to cause confusion, or to cause mistake, or to deceive. The company also fears that Northrop and its products will be held in disrepute because of the condom. John Hughes, the owner of Stealth Condoms, Inc., said, "We offer a heck of a lot more protection than the stealth bomber, at a lot less cost." I thought that was pretty good. That was from Reproductive Rights Update, Volume 3, Number 2, January 25th, 1991. Now, earlier in the program,